All right, welcome back to another episode of the Nobody Know-It-Alls. I am Rob.
And this is Terry.
We're back for episode five. Episode five, Terry. We're world famous by now.
I know. It's unreal. We got all of 36 people maybe listening.
Yeah, all the way from Tokyo to Zimbabwe to Ireland, Iceland.
I hear there's people on Mars listening.
Yeah, all we're nationwide. let's start things off today. Is of many things. Well, for one thing, here's a happy note. Today is the Stone Cold Steve Austin Day.
Oh yeah,
it is 3/16. So Stone Cold Steve Austin Day. I've been kind of liking those memes as I've been seeing them scrolling around today. I watched a top 10 best moments of Stone Cold. It seems like every single one of them has him flipping off Vince McMahon.
Oh, they're all wonderful. Everything about that era was, that's what really just stuck a needle in the arm of wrestling and really just, they took off. My gosh. Yeah, 3/16 day, I should go in and crack open a beer and give Sarah a stunner. Would that be okay?
She says no. I might be setting a bad example. Well, now that I've got a chance to laugh, now we're going to get on to my one rant. I have no raves this week, Terry. No, none. No raves. I'm distraught. I'm upset. I'm angry. The Bears have signed Andy Dalton to a one-year, $10 million contract to be their starting quarterback for next football season.
Did I miss that?
You must have, because the Seahawks shut the door on Russell Wilson, and the Bears went out and got the Red Rocket, Andy Dalton, to be their quarterback for $10 million.
A one-year contract. Really not like winning.
$10 million. You know how much he made last year in Dallas? $3 million. $3 million last year in Dallas. Ryan Pez says, hey, let's triple that. Oh my God.
Dang, it's painful. That's awful.
It's painful. Painful. They could have had him for nothing last year. They spent $30 million on Nick Foles and a draft pick to go out and now sign somebody who's worse than Foles and Trubisky.
Wow.
Oh,
that's unbelievable.
It's unforgivable.
Ah, gosh. Well, this should be fun.
This is like the cherry on top of the passed over Mahomes and Watson cake. This is just another example of the Bears aren't doing squat until they get out of the McCaskey's control. It was even worse.
Rex Grossman.
Yeah. Oh, it makes me long for the days of Jay Cutler.
Oh, yeah.
It makes me weepy for Cutler. Oh. And you know what else? The worst part of that is what that signing tells me is there's no urgency on Pace and Nagy. And that means they're not on the hot seat. That means they're not going anywhere. They're not. That's not the play you make if your job is on the line. That's not the guy you go for when you've got to win right now. It's another great defense going to be wasted by a pitiful offense and a team that's run by people who know they're going to fill the stadium whether they win or lose. And it's driving me nuts as
anything
a fan. You know what I wish I could do? I wish I had this kind of pull. I wish I had this kind of sway, this kind of reach, this kind of following to where you could just – I wish I could just convince every single Bears fan in the Chicagoland, the whole Midwest, to simply turn them off. Don't go to the games. Don't watch the shows. Don't follow them. Don't click on the articles about them. Just spend one season completely giving them the cold shoulder till they get the idea. They get it through their thick skulls that we're not just going to sit there and let them shovel us manure all day and treat it like a five-course dinner.
Hey, well, you would think that would work, but the Cubs, no matter what they put out there, people are there, no matter what.
That's... I read that today, and it ruined my day. It yeah. ruined my day, Terry. Ruined my day.
I'm sorry for your loss.
I did read one thing that made me smile, though. It was something they were. I wish I'd have written it down. It's just some random little thing I read about the Jaguars said they've spent more money in free agency than any other team has in the last. I guess maybe since they started, maybe that's what the cutoff was. It was in the billion. $1 billion in free agency spending, and they have nothing to show for it.
Gosh, it's like, who's on the team that's worth the money?
Yeah, it's not 1 year. I think it's over a stretch of time. I can't remember the stretch of time.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what my rant is today. My rant is on the McCaskies, on Ryan Pace, and even on Matt Nagy. He got figured out with him. It only took the NFL 1 year to figure out Nagy, and they knew what he was about and neutralized him. And now we're going into next season, another year older, a defense that's slowly slipping out of its competitive window, and an offense that's not going to put up more than 14 points a game. It's disgusting. Can't wait.
I'll steer clear of him when fantasy comes around.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, steer clear of anybody on offense. No wonder Allen Robinson doesn't want to stay there anymore.
Yeah. Now he's probably feeling that way even more.
Oh, yeah. He's not signing that franchise tender now. There's no way.
No.
All right. Well, you know what? I don't want to dwell on negative. So let's move along. We're just going to jump right into our retro review this week. I had the tag on the end of the last episode that we lost the tail end of it for technical difficulties, and I dropped the bomb that we are doing WrestleMania 3 for this week's WrestleMania or retro review. So WrestleMania 3, bigger, better, badder. That's the tagline they had for WrestleMania 3. Took place in the Pontiac Silverdome in old Detroit, Michigan. Well, not in Detroit, but where the Detroit Lions played. Right. On March 29th, 1987. This is the second time 1987 has come up on these retro reviews. That was also the year that Appetite for Destruction dropped. And so we might have to expand our years here. We've gone to the world twice.
Week's topic was going to be 1987. I'm like, I got to rethink this. This 1987 business. We'll keep coming back to it.
We're two-fifths of our retro reviews have occurred in 87. So we'll have to vary it up a little bit. Yeah, but it was March 29th, 1987. And at the time, it set, allegedly, the indoor attendance record of 93,173 human souls crammed into the Pontiac Silverdome, according to the then WWF. That is a disputed number. Some people say it was as low as just over 80,000. Either way, that's a lot of people.
For sure.
A lot of people showed up for that. It was, at allegedly, like I said, allegedly the largest indoor gathering of human beings in United States history. The gate, the physical gate on ticket sales to get into the building, netted the WWF $1.6 million in 1987, which, if you adjust for inflation, is $3.7 million today, just at the physical gate. That's not a bad day.
No, especially back then, because wrestling wasn't as big back then. Now
Look
at it, you got to pay $70 just to get a bad seat.
And that's even figuring in the fact that the tickets for sporting events, especially for wrestling events, would have been much cheaper than they are now.
I wanted to touch on your attendance there. That record, I looked up and I noticed it was held for 12 years, and it finally fell, of all things, at a papal mass at the TWA Dome in St. Louis when Pope John Paul II came. And they
I read that too.
104,000 people indoors.
I guess the Pope didn't need as big of a ring as a WWE. No. Yeah, I read that too. That's awesome. Well, at least it was the Pope. I mean, it's hard to argue with the Pope. Right.
Exactly.
The pay-per-view buys on this brought the WWF $10.7 million in 1987, which figures out to $24.77 million today. Again, that's decent money. And also, right, pay-per-views weren't as expensive back then as they are now, too. So and all in all, this was a hugely financially successful event for the WWF. It was their biggest event to date, obviously. And in my opinion, the template for every WrestleMania to come. The first one came out of the gate. It was a big event. It was a spectacle. I think they're kind of figuring out what to do. And WrestleMania 2 was ambitious in that it was, you know, took place across three different cities, closed circuit television, and you know, so it had its own vibe. But they think they figured out the winning formula in WrestleMania 3. What do you think?
Absolutely, because the main event alone is still remembered to this day outside of wrestling circles. People remember the moment that happened, and it goes hand in hand with what wrestling is, and people think, I remember that. I remember that being big news.
Absolutely. We'll Hogan slams the giant. Yeah.
Oh, you want to say, go for it.
Well, as I was saying, that was the moment. That was the big finale. We'll go into more detail about it, but yeah, that was a major event. When we talked about Appetite for Destruction, we kind of went through a little bit of pop culture and music and movies and stuff like that of what was going on in 87. One thing we didn't touch on was sports. And so since this is at the time what is calling itself a sporting event, this is before Vincent K. McMahon Jr. came clean and admitted that it was the ends were determined. The endings of the matches were determined before they started. It was considered a sporting event. I believed when I was a kid that it was real.
Right.
Let's run down some of the sports events. Champions in 1987. Super Bowl 21, the Giants defeated the Denver Broncos 39-20 to bring home the NFL's championship for the season that played the year before. It's, of course, 1 year removed from the greatest Super Bowl of all time, which was Super Bowl 20, which is the last time the Bears won a championship. It still hurts. It still stings, Terry.
I'm sure it does.
It's going to hurt for a while. All right, World Series. This was going to hurt you.
Don't want to talk about that. Mute.
The Twins defeated Cardinals in 7 games to take the World Series that year. Any thoughts on that one? Does it still hurt?
Well, I was 4 years old, so it didn't hurt that bad. But at the same time, there was a 17-year gap in between World Series, and that hurt. But yeah. Not in like 108 years.
No, that one that was
okay.
I was born into that pain. All right, the NBA, the Lakers beat the Celtics in 6 games. Classic matchup there, man. That's like storybook matchup. Lakers Celtics. That's old school.
I was thinking that for a future retro review is Lakers Celtics rivalry.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to some of these retro reviews that we're going to do. And I like the fact that we don't have to limit to one thing. We're going to just anything that was old, we'll review it. If we liked it, if it was interesting, we'll review it. NCAA football, Penn State, the Nittany Lions took down my favorite college football team, the Hurricanes of Miami, 14-10 to win the NCAA football championship. Took out the U. That was back in the day, too, when that was U was on the upswing. We were just getting to the their dominance of college football. Actually, the whole state of Florida's dominance. There was a 10-year stretch where Florida just ran college football.
Yep, they sure did. They'd routinely
have Miami, Florida, Florida State in the top five. Then you'd have like an Ohio State or a Michigan, Notre Dame in there somewhere to round out that top five. But Florida dominated football for a while.
Yeah, and we're talking wrestling, and that's where The Rock went and was a big, big part of the
hurricane. That's right, The Rock played it to U.
Yep.
I forgot about that. That's right, he did. The NCAA basketball, Indiana defeated Syracuse 74-73 in a nail-biter to win the college basketball trophy that year. In boxing, Tyson picked up the WBA title over James Smith, the most boring name in boxing history, in a 12-round decision. James Smith. That's not going to strike fear into anybody.
Yeah, so, he's got to have a nickname.
There's got to be something better than just James Smith. That's pathetic. For a boxer, that's just terrible.
Bone Crusher. He was James Bone Crusher Smith.
Well, that's better. That was better. You got to go big with something like that when your name is James Smith. That's like Rob Martin. You're just not going to instill any fear into anybody. That's too normal of a name. I guess the Vince brought out the celebrities again for WrestleMania 3. We had none other than Aretha Franklin kicking things off with her rendition of America the Beautiful, which I can listen to 100 times.
Yeah, and she's got an amazing voice.
What a legend. What a legend. What an absolute legend. And then, of course, you got Bob Uecker as your MC and Mary Hart as your celebrity timekeeper.
I love Bob Uecker. I thought that was just great. And then he comes back for WrestleMania 4. He was hilarious. And it's, if you ever listen to him announce, it's just a riot. Oh, my gosh. The guy is a cut up.
He's such a great guy. You know, you can't help but just enjoy having him around. He's so self-deprecating. He doesn't take himself too seriously, at least not in his persona on screen. Doesn't take himself too seriously. He's just there for fun. He's willing to be the butt of the joke. Was it WrestleMania 4 where he has the interview where Andre just like wraps his big hands around his neck and starts shaking like that?
It's a gag.
he pulls off that very well. I loved it. Now, Mary Hart, that's a throwback, man. That was an old school. You forgot how big a deal Mary Hart was for a while. And seeing her on there again, it reminds you that, you know, back in the day, back in the late 80s, that Entertainment Tonight, that was the deal. That was before you had the internet to find out stuff. That was before you could go on social media to hear about things that were going on. Your clue into what was going on with your favorite celebrity was Mary Hart on Entertainment Tonight. It didn't help that she was, you know, easy on the eyes too. So, all right, well, let's get into it then. Let's just get in. We're not going to do a blow by blow recap of every match, but we're going to go through and just and talk a little bit about each match. I did want to point out one thing before we even get into that. I was doing some research on this because I got interested. There are at WrestleMania 3, 34 Hall of Famers represented in WrestleMania 3. There is a Hall of Famer in every single match that happened at WrestleMania 3. And we're going to go through it. I'll prove it to you.
I'm looking right. Yeah, I think all these guys.
Yeah. So the first one out of the gate to start it off was the Can-Am Connection. Rick Martel and Tom Zenk defeated Bob Orton and a Magnificent Morocco with Mr. Fuji. This is a tag team match. 3 Hall of Famers in that match. And that's not Rick Martel, who is not a Hall of Famer. This is a good example. Right out of the – if you're a modern wrestling fan or if you watch wrestling now, even into the first match, you realize that things were a little bit different back then. The pace of the match is not the same. It's a much more – I guess as I try to rationalize it out in my head, it's that you're trying to maintain the illusion of reality a little bit more. So some of the stuff that you know you see these guys do nowadays, it's done with the idea that the audience knows that this is a orchestrated event, and you know, it's you get the same impact, the same excitement, but without the person going, "Oh my God, he really just put that dude's head through a table."
Yeah.
Like, so back then, I think they might have just been. It's just a different style. It was a different style of wrestling. And your thoughts on that?
My wife's favorite personas of all time when it comes to wrestling was Mr. Fuji. she loves him. That just cracks her up every time she sees him with that little bowler hat on. And she's even hinted at possibly getting a Mr. Fuji tattoo someday with a little
bowler hat. So it goes deep.
Yeah, she loves him.
All right. Well, like I said, the Can-Am Connection, Rick Martel and Tom Zenk defeated Bob Orton. Bob Orton, that name sounds familiar. That's Randy's dad.
Yeah, for sure.
So Randy
and,
Orton.
Partner, I would say, yeah, and his partner, Magnificent Morocco. His nickname, The Rock.
That's right. I forgot. That's right. It was. Oh, yeah. So we got 3 Hall of Famers in that match. That's amazing. Just right out of the gate. First match, you got 3 Hall of Famers. Next up. You have Billy Jack Haynes versus Hercules with manager Bobby Heenan. Ended in a double countout. Bobby Heenan, Hall of Famer. One of the best. One of the best. Absolutely.
He was a riot.
I don't think you get
was funny.
I don't think you get the golden age of wrestling without Bobby Heenan.
No, because he got you into the match and his banter with Gorilla Monsoon was legendary.
Oh, yeah.
It was so funny.
Yeah.
Wasn't this supposed to be a full Nelson match?
Yes, it was. And they were ended in a double countout. So
Who knows?
Even back in the day, WWF then, doing those weird finishes, double count out finishes. So,
yeah.
next up, you're getting the traditional carnival style sideshow attraction type match that they still, as recently as a few years ago, will go to the well for. And that is Hillbilly Jim with the Haiti Kid and Little Beaver to, what's the word we're supposed to use?
Little person.
Little persons. Little people. defeated King Kong Bundy and Little Tokyo and Little Lord Littlebrook by disqualification. Hillbilly Jim, Hall of Famer. From that match. King Kong Bundy, not a Hall of Famer. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe just didn't make enough big enough impact. Hillbilly Jim was around for a long time.
Yeah, but, I mean, King Kong Bundy headlined a WrestleMania.
Yeah, I don't think that equals automatic Hall of Fame. Okay.
I was surprised.
That was fun. They just kept calling him midgets the entire time.
Yeah, it was a different time.
I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, man, you can't do that now. Each name, Haiti Kid, Little Beaver, Little Tokyo, Lord Little Brook.
Yeah,
not a whole lot. I just want to make sure you guys know these guys are small.
Right.
Yeah, we want to make sure you know they're small.
Right. And where they're from.
And where they're from.
All right. That was the shortest match on the card, too, by the way. Only went 3 minutes and 25 seconds.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, that was long enough. That was long enough. Although, you know, like I said, they still go back to this well. As recently as a few years ago, you had Hornswoggle and El Torito with the WLC match a few years back, which I got to tell you, I laughed through the whole thing. I'm not going to lie. It was entertaining. The WLC, that's a great name for a match, too. The WLC, that was brilliant. All right, next up, the fourth match on the card, Harley Race Hall of Famer with Bobby Heenan Hall of Famer and the Fabulous Moolah Hall of Famer defeated the Junkyard Dog Hall of Famer in a loser must bow match.
JYD.
Now here, Junkyard Dog was one of my favorites when I was a kid. But looking at him as an adult, that character, just in the way he was presented, it's rough with the chain around his neck and the collar. That's just rough. And I wasn't supposed to be, you know, a slave thing or anything like that. He was supposed to be like a dog that's off his chain, but still that's not flying today. But that match for all four people, Hall of Famers in that match. And Fabulous Moolah is not happening today.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, she's got a twisted history, and we won't go into her history. You want to figure out just how bad a person Fabulous Moolah was. She was basically a pimp, and just go study her on your own. We're not gonna delve into all of that, but there's a lot to negative said about Fabulous Moolah.
There definitely is.
Junkyard Dog did bow, but ended up getting his revenge immediately. So he played by the rules. Why do you think Junkyard Dog never got like good title runs? He was crazy popular in the South, crazy popular, as big as Hogan in some of those Southern wrestling areas. Just never got his chance.
Unfortunately, it felt like it was whitewashed a lot back then. It was,
yeah,
it was unfortunate. Right. But then you got guys that came around like Ron Simmons, The Rock, and Kofi Kingston recently.
Bobby Lashley,
might have been told. That took too long to get there, for sure.
Speaking of Bobby Lashley, we took the boys to a wrestling event in it was Peoria. And as we're walking out to our car, we walked past where the wrestlers would exit their parking garage. And Bobby Lashley was out there just kind of walking along the fence talking to him. We got within just a couple feet of him. That dude is a monster. He's so big. He looks big on TV. When you're standing next to him, he's like he's not even the same. They're not even the same species. He's so big. No. That dude is just ripped. I mean, so friendly, so nice, just talking to people, waving, saying hi. We didn't really see a whole lot because they were just coming out through their cars. He was the only one that was out there walking around, but did get to see Bray Wyatt come out in his car, the back of the car. He was he was on his phone, and just, I think we saw a couple people go by. We didn't know who they were, but that was our brush with celebrity at the rest of the event.
I remember going to a show late 90s, I think, and Big Show was there. We had second row seats. So, and seeing that in front of you, he's not just tall, he's just wide and big.
Right.
Unbelievable. He's an attraction all his own.
My brother Zach, he got to go see a WWE event. Andre the Giant was there. Close to Andre the Giant. He said it was just insane how big he is. I went to one back when I was in college. I saw The Rock. He was there in China, and it was unreal how big China was, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was, I love the Junkyard Dog. He made the cartoon though. He was on that Saturday morning cartoon with Hogan. Do you remember that cartoon?
I do. Rock and Roll Wrestling.
Rock and Roll and Wrestling or something like that. Yeah. So he got to make that at least. So, he did all right. I really liked the Junkyard Dog. He was one of my favorites as a kid. All right. Up next, match number 5, another tag team match. The Dream Team, Greg Valentine and Brutus Beefcake, with Johnny Valiant and Dino Bravo, defeated the Rougeau brothers, Jacques and Raymond. And the Dream Team would break up, basically, in this match. And we would get the face turn for Brutus Beefcake, who would go on to great fame and get his start as the barber in our very next match. And a little bit of controversy surrounding Brutus the Barber Beefcake. That's not really controversy. A lot of people give him some grief. They say that he got where he got because he was such a good friend of Hogan's. You have any thoughts on that?
I don't, because I don't know too much about it, so I can't really speak on it. But yeah, okay. I've heard the same thing.
Yeah, he was supposedly a really good friend of Hogan. Of course, Hogan had as much pull as any wrestler's ever had at this point in time.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're in with Hogan, you're in good. Not really much else to talk about with that match. The one that it played into, of course, is the next one, match 6. The Roddy Piper defeats Adrian Adonis, who was out there with Jimmy Hart, in a hair versus hair match, which is still kind of an exciting concept. You know, you're going to have your whole head shaved, and of course, Brutus Beefcake came out to do the honors, to cut up Adrian Adonis. Adrian Adonis, a character that's not going to fly today. Not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, but Roddy Piper.
Their matches are classic, yeah. I was just going to say that they've had several over the years, and one of my favorite ones was they had, I can't remember the two women in it, but it was two women, and the woman got her head shaved afterwards. And that was,
I was just going to ask about that, if they've ever done that for women. I don't remember that.
I think it was Molly Holly, if I believe, was the woman that had her head shaved. I can't remember who beat her to do it.
Wow. I don't see them doing that with these girls today. No. I don't see them signing up for that. Careful. Let's talk a little bit about Roddy Piper.
All right.
An absolute legend in wrestling. One of the best talkers in the history of wrestling. One of the best promos in the history of wrestling. And we'd go back and forth like a lot of people would between heel and face. And he had a decent run out there in Hollywood and was respected all the way up till the time that he left too soon. In fact, his legacy was carried on by none other than Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
And so I think that's fitting, you know, for her to carry on his legacy like that. With the blessing of his estate, his family, they are on board with her taking over the Rowdy moniker, and even the look, the kilt and the leather jacket, always you couldn't look away. Roddy Piper, he always kept your attention. He was old school, knew how to keep people tuned in and paying attention to what was going on. Absolute legend.
Any of these new guys, they got to go back, and I bet that's when they learn how to talk on a microphone. They're watching Roddy Piper tapes. They got to learn from the legend.
That's right.
He had a lot of ways of controlling the audience and controlling just everybody, just knowing what to say, how to say it. and to elicit whatever reaction he wanted. And that's a gift.
Definitely. Absolutely. Absolutely. Nothing bad to say about Roddy Piper at all. Let's move on to the next match. Danny Davis with the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart with Jimmy Hart defeated Tito Santana and the British Bulldog. What a loaded tag team match this is. Let me read that again. You got Bret Hart and Jimmy Anvil Neidhart teaming up with Danny Davis, but you're up against Tito Santana and the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid. That is a loaded match. You've got 5 out of the 6 guys are legitimate legends in the business.
For sure.
And Danny Davis is there just as a heat check, man. He's just trying to get – he was there just because everybody hated him so much. I remember the Danny Davis character started off as a referee and used to cheat so bad that he finally got roped into wrestling. And, you know, it was a great job by the company to play off people's anger at him already. So that was a pretty good match, 6-man tag team match. Next up, we have Butch Reed with Slick defeating Coco Beware in a singles match. This match lasted the second shortest amount of time, 3:39. And what were your thoughts on Coco Beware? He is in the Hall of Fame.
Well, Coco Beware was just one of those gimmick characters. He was fun. Yeah, he got the crowd happy, and they cheered for him. I don't know if he was ever even a bad guy, but people loved him. They just loved the parrot. They loved the way he danced in the ring. They loved everything about him. He was just fun to watch. I mean, he wasn't anything that really got you excited, but it was still entertaining enough.
I was surprised that he was in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Just, I think, I don't know. He was never one of my – I mean, like you said, he was fun, but he was forgettable. I think is the only thing you could say negative about him. But, you know, the bird, man, that was always kind of cool, and he did the dance with the bird, and he was athletic, and he could move around in the ring. So I don't want to speak ill of him. It was surprising to see his name in the Hall of Fame, but you don't have Hercules. You don't have, the Dynamite Kid. Well, he's coming in soon. Isn't he the British? Are they adding the British Bulldogs this year, I think?
No, I don't know.
I don't remember. Or King Kong Bundy. I can't see why Coco Beware is in the Hall of Fame over somebody like King Kong Bundy. Just me personally. But, no, it's not my call. All right. Now, Butch Reed and Coco Beware had the pleasure of being the lead-in to the worst match in the history of the WWF, WWE.
Oh, geez. Come on.
No, I'm lying. They're lead-in. They led in for the WWF Intercontinental Championship match between Ricky the Dragon Steamboat with George the Animal Steel in his corner versus, I'll just tip my hand right now, my favorite wrestler of all time, Randy Macho Man Savage with Miss Elizabeth in his corner in a match that would absolutely steal the show at WrestleMania and I think inspire much of the style of wrestling that we see today. What are your thoughts?
Oh, that I rewatched that match the other day, and it still holds up. I mean, are they more high flying now, more intense now? Yes, but they're just learning from the people who paved the way, and these guys definitely paved the way. They're flipping all over the place, and it was fun. It was high pace, and people weren't entirely used to that, so it was really something exciting to watch when they hit the ring. Another thing in that match, George Animal Steel and his crush on Miss Elizabeth was just chasing him around. Oh, my God.
And you know what makes it even more intense is when you find out later on down the road that Randy was super jealous of anybody talking to or being around Elizabeth. And so that just plays into it even more when you realize that he probably wasn't acting in parts of those situations, that he was probably a little bit annoyed for real.
Yeah,
and he had that kind of reputation. This match, I mean, when you watch this match, when you're watching WrestleMania 3, go back and watch it again, this match jumps off the screen at you compared to everything else on the card, with the exception of maybe Andre and Hogan, but that was for different reasons. But the athleticism and the false finishes and the pace of this match, this was the longest match on the card, clocking out at 14:35. a full 2.5 minutes longer than Hogan and Andre.
And so that's actually short for compared to what they do nowadays. A long matches on the card are at least 20 minutes, sometimes 30.
Right. Absolutely. And they just tore the house down. And I'm going to stand and die on this hill. Macho Man won that match. He pinned Steamboat while the referee was out. 1, 2, 3. Did it clean. So I'm still mad. I'm still mad that Macho Man didn't walk out over there with the title that night. He beat him fair and square. Now, afterwards, he did try to get him with the ring bell again, but Macho's going to macho. What are you going to do? So, but it turns out that Ricky Steamboat did come back and beat him with a small package, but what a great match. Those two. Now, the legend is, you believe it if you want to, is that Macho wrote that whole match out from start to finish, and they worked it according to a script the whole way. Now, Steamboat has said that's not how it went down. Macho Man never really talked about it, but the rumor was that that's how he liked to do his matches. He liked to plan them out, and they would talk about it nonstop. But Steamboat says that wasn't necessarily the case. They were working from inside the match as well. Did you have any thoughts on those?
I'd say that's a lot to remember. I mean,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you got that. You said a 14 minute match, and how many moves and how many false finishes and how many jumping off of this, jumping off of that, and all the spots you got to hit in that time frame to get one match to look good. These guys are wrestling 300 times a year, and you're talking about choreographing every single match and how it's going to play out. That's got to be impossible.
One of the, let's talk about this match and its history. Is it a top 10 match in WrestleMania history?
I don't know. It's just for the history alone and setting the way for everybody. So it kind of makes it up there. But if you go on skill alone, then no. But
You wouldn't put it in the top 10 just on skill? Just on
skill alone, no. But the fact it's very memorable and paved the way, then yeah, I would. It'd probably be near the bottom, but bottom 10, but it's still up there.
It's hard to deny the athleticism has just gone up so much in the business compared to where it was back here in 87. Everybody and their brother jumps off the top rope now. Back in the day, it wasn't like that. You know, Macho Man was, they called him high flying just because of his flying elbow and that double axe handle off the top rope. And you had Jimmy Superfly Snuka and a couple other guys that would go up off the top rope regularly. Then now everybody does it.
Yeah, everybody
Big now Show went up to the top rope one time.
Everybody now shredded. They have a diet that they have to follow. They have to do everything a certain way. Back then, these guys were just big bruisers. They didn't care what they looked like as long as they were strong. They just worked out and ate whatever they want, drank whatever they want, snorted whatever they wanted.
Injected whatever they wanted. Exactly. It is easier to pick out the steroid bodies in WrestleMania 3.
Mm-hmm.
Real easy to pick them out. You know who you're looking at when you look at them. I'm looking at you, Hercules.
And Magnus in Morocco.
Right. Look at you guys. That was not a natural born body. Now, how would you like to be Honky Tonk Man and Jake the Snake Roberts sitting backstage behind the gorilla position, watching on the monitor, seeing what's happening? And no, you got to go out there next.
Yeah, it's got to be tough. And they are two legends, but I mean.
Both Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
And bringing out Alice Cooper, I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah, that was fun.
With Jake the Snake Roberts. That's a tough draw, and to follow that up. I don't think anybody follows that up.
No.
It's like I said, you gotta remember too, it's conditional on the time. Nobody else was putting on matches like that. Nobody of what Savage and Steamboat did. It was groundbreaking. I really do believe that that's why they set the template for the kind of pace that the matches go at now. How they could be so fast paced, and you never know what's going on, and you never at any moment you're thinking somebody can win. I love the way they finished it up too with a small package. All that high flying, those dropping the elbow, jumping off the top rope, Steamboat with the martial arts and the arm drags. Those arm drags Savage like what, 7 times or something like that in that match.
Yeah,
and Savage is just bumping like a champion for him the whole match. And then rolls him up in a small package. I love that. That was a great finish. And then
you don't see Honky Tonk Man very much anymore.
No, you don't. Honky Tonk Man defeated Jake the Snake Roberts with Alice Cooper. Honky Tonk Man would go on to be the longest running Intercontinental Champion in WWF history. Not too long after this, he wins that belt. And a great heel character, Honky Tonk Man. You hated him.
Easy to.
You just hated him. Yeah, it was easy to hate him. He played it perfect. And the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, just a great duo. Coming up after that, the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff, both Hall of Famers with Slick, defeated the Killer Bees.
That's in my ugly category.
That matchup cracks me up. What's that?
I said that's in my ugly category.
Yeah, the Killer Bees. Come on. This is the match that went on right before the main event. You could have maybe flip-flopped those, put up the Iron Sheik and Nikolai following Savage and Steamboat, and let Honky Tonk and Jake the Snake lead into the main event. I think that's a blown call right there. Definitely. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, you have got to have some sort of garbage match beforehand, so it makes the title match look that much better, I suppose. They still make the mistake of having an amazing match on before the main event. They've done that a couple times and since then, and it just takes away from the vibe of the main event. It's like, okay, everybody go to the bathroom, get your snacks, get your concessions. This match is on.
Yeah, because you know Hogan's going to pose for at least 15 minutes after the match ends anyway, so yeah, take into account the match length and then the posing length. And that brings us to, we get our first look at the Hacksaw part of Hacksaw Jim Duggan in this match. He comes out to cost the Killer Bees their victory by attacking Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik. So this is where we get the USA 2x4 carrying Hacksaw Jim Duggan debut. He'd been around for a while, but I think it's the first time his character really takes on that USA Patriot tone. This is where he breaks that out. And then, of course, the main event, the reason we all came here, Hulk Hogan would body slam and defeat Andre the Giant for his first ever loss with Bobby Heenan in his corner. I rewatched this match just this evening, getting ready for this. I wanted to have it fresh in my mind. Not a terrible match, but a match that obviously was structured to fit Andre's deteriorating health and Hogan's limited athletic ability. A very slow paced match, very ponderous, very deliberate. But then you, of course, did get the Hulk up. And I got to be honest with you, when he does the Hulk up again, it ignited that feeling I had when I was a kid and watched it. It reminded me of how I used to think that was so amazing that he would, you know, all of a sudden, where's he getting this energy from? Where's he getting the courage and all that stuff like that? And I found myself the little 12-year-old kid that lives inside of me wanting to believe again in Hulkamania, the power of Hulkamania. And then, of course, as a grown man, I know Hulk Hogan was pretty much a horrible human, and it takes a little bit of the fun out of it.
Yeah.
It's always bad when you live long enough to see your heroes fall.
Yeah, there's plenty of them.
But the crowd was into it, and that was the thing I took away from this match too, is reminding myself just how big Hulkamania really was. This was its apex. This was the height of Hulkamania. It didn't ever get any bigger than it did here, because that place hung on every single move in that match. The entire arena was dialed in. Go ahead.
They were just hoping, praying that he could actually slam the Giant. And when he did, I'm surprised the roof didn't come off.
Right.
That was nuts.
It was a huge pop for that. And then, of course, you know, the Hogan pose down where he knew how to work a crowd. And back in the day, there was no one better than Hogan at getting that crowd to be a part of the experience, to join in on the fun, to get involved and be a part of the show, so to speak, in a way. And those crowds, man, people loved Hogan so much. There wasn't any of the backlash against him yet. The backlash against Hogan didn't really start till like, I think, around WrestleMania 5, where you started to see some of the fan base be like, okay, enough's enough. I know that's where I signed around it, because that was personal reasons. Yeah, it was for personal reasons for me, because as soon as I saw him break up the Mega Powers, I'm like, oh, this is what's happening. Any thoughts you had on that match?
Yeah, it was just legendary. It's one that everybody's seen. And I mean, watching that moment is like, wow, you're looking at the fans in the background losing their minds was just insane. The match as a whole, like we said, was as best it could be, but watching Andre hit his head on the ring post was hilarious, because he's like 2 miles away from the actual post, but he acted like he just ran into a wall. When he does a back body drop onto the floor, he like sets him down on the floor and supposed to act like he just landed on the concrete. He kind of crawled down his back, I guess. It was weak, but
I mean, technically, if you sit down on the concrete, you landed on the concrete. So I guess technically they weren't wrong.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was technically not a terrible match. Terrible match technically, but watching him actually slam Andre the Giant was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was, and that was the whole build up. They said, I thought they set it up, like I said, for what they were dealing with, Andre's limitations, and of course, obviously Hulk's limitations in general. You know, you weren't going to get a high-flying match out of the two of them. But it actually told a pretty good story in the match, where Hogan went for it early with the body slam and didn't get it. And then he tried to come back a couple times, but Andre would stop him. Now, like I said, the actual technical wrestling was bad. But the storytelling within the match was pretty good. And, of course, Hogan does get the victory. Everybody goes home happy, and it shuts it down. That was the end of WrestleMania 3. And the end of anonymity for the WWF. Everybody knew about wrestling now. It was big deal now. It was already getting, it was on its upswing and everything. WrestleMania 3 just told everybody, this is for real. We're here to stay. And it would go on to maintain that stature up till now. You know, we're talking 40 years later, almost. No, not four. 30, over 30 years now.
Yeah, long time.
And they're still churning out. WrestleMania is still a major event every year. And now it's smack dab in the middle of 12 other pay-per-views every year for WWE, but it's still a big deal. And I think this is why I think you have to put the Andre and Hogan match up so high on lists of most important matches in the history of wrestling, at least of the WWE. I don't see how you could put them outside of maybe the top three most important matches.
Yeah, impactful, more than anything. Yeah, it's technically horrible, but impactful, yes.
Yeah, it made the WWE legit. They were, after this, Hogan was a made man for sure. And he was a superhero. You gotta remember too, there weren't as many options for entertainment as there are now. You know, you didn't have every sporting event on TV. You know, you would catch like the Cubs would be on cable, but if you didn't have cable, you were out of luck. You wouldn't get to see sports all the time, but you saw wrestling every Saturday morning, and you got to see these guys, and they became icons. And which kind of brings, I thought we'd do a little bit of, have a little fun with this week and do some Mount Rushmores of wrestling. Now, we'll do a Mount Rushmore for all time, but that's, and we'll debate. It'd be interesting if we have the same list, but I thought it'd be cool too to do a golden era, which was this era, the Hogan era, the golden era, Mount Rushmore, a modern era, guys that are working today, a women's Rushmore, and then a personal favorite, Rushmore. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me. I'm ready.
Yeah, let's duke it out. Which one do you want to do first?
Yeah, let's go with Golden Era since we're already talking about it.
All right. I'll tell you what, I'll start this one off. I'll tell you one that I've got, and you tell me if he's on yours or not. Okay. And we'll just go with the easy one. We're going to go Hogan on there.
Of course. He has to Hogan's be on there.
Absolutely. Biggest. Might be the most important wrestler in WWE history. All his baggage, all his limitations. Without Hogan, none of this is here. I don't know. I don't think so anyway. All right, let's move on. Andre, did he make your list?
He did not.
No? Okay.
He did not make my list, but he was close. He was right outside the top four. But, yeah, just not enough for me. There was too gimmicky, but he was an attraction, and he was something for the good guys to try to take down. And I know he was big back in the 70s and all that, but, yeah, it just wasn't as impactful for me. I've watched the documentary. I think it's an amazing story, and I felt bad for him after watching it because of
right.
how much pain he was constantly in. But, yeah, he just missed it.
All right, and then I also have Savage.
Oh, yeah. Macho Man's on my list.
All right, so that's three of mine. This next one might surprise you a little bit. I'm going Heenan.
Bobby Heenan, really? Well,
yeah.
Yeah. Not a wrestler, but yeah.
Well, he did wrestle, though. He would wrestle matches. Yeah, a little bit.
Just a few times, more as a gimmick than anything, but yeah.
Yeah. I just think that he was so important to the business. I had to put him in there. That's my surprise entry on the Rushmore for the Golden Age. All right, so we had two of the same. What are your other two that I didn't have?
Ultimate Warrior.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it is a good one. He also was able to get that crowd absolutely jacked every time he came out. He'd come running down, shake those ropes, and just lose his mind. Like, I mean, he was just crazy.
I hate you, Terry.
Absolutely.
That's a better pick. That's a better pick.
Well, it is. But he was amazing. There was nothing about him that people didn't like. It was later on that people gave him a hard time because they heard of how he was behind the scenes. But he was just an amazing athlete all the way around. He was shredded, and he seemed like a legitimate threat to Hogan, and eventually took him down in WrestleMania 6.
His promos. Promos are some of the most memorable. He didn't know what he was talking about. The dude sounded like he was crazy. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's a fun thing to go back and watch.
And the stars in the sky and the universe and the solar winds came blowing. This just seemed to be going off the deep end on something. You have no idea where he was coming from.
Yeah, just run out and shake the ropes. We'll be fine.
Oh, that's great. How did I leave him off there? That's unforgivable.
I don't know.
Unforgivable. All right. Go. Well, what's your fourth?
Well, he wasn't exclusively in WWF for very long in the golden era, but Ric Flair. He's another one of those guys that if he wasn't around, you might not have wrestling as big as it is today. He was amazing. He did such a good job at making you not like him. He owned the crowd. He was the coolest talking guy, and watching his bad guy promos back then you still get into them. They're still entertaining. They hold up. He was just limousine riding.
Flair.
Wheel and deal and son of a gun.
One of a kind. Man, I went back and forth. This is if we move over to the all time, Flair was the one that I had the hardest time with. I have him as an honorable mention for the golden era. And to tip my hand a little bit, honorable mention on the all time Rushmore also. He was so close to that list though, so close to it. Amazing. Yeah, that's a great list. I can't believe I forgot Warrior. I cannot believe I forgot Warrior. That's terrible.
I still remember. I think I watched the WrestleMania where he was inducted into the Hall of Fame with you. And
yeah.
I remember your brother texting me, "Look, Ultimate Warrior's dead," like 2 days later. I was like, are you kidding
me? That was so sad.
It was almost poetic how he went out because he was going out and everybody's re-embracing him again. And he goes out and gives that unbelievable speech the next night on Raw. And then passes away the very next day. That that actually hit me when I heard it. It's like other people you hear pass away, celebrities, it's like, oh, that's too bad. That one actually hit me because I was like, that dude just got a lot of that heat taken off him and got that love that he deserved all those years. And then just to pass away so suddenly after that was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was very sad. And to see his wife come out later on.
Yeah.
When they come up with the next year at WrestleMania when they brought out the award, the Warrior Award, and gave it to Connor. If you've never watched the story of Connor, I can't remember his last name now.
Mahalik?
Yeah, something like that. That will make you cry.
Absolutely. That was a hard time watching
weep. That. Yeah, it'll make you weep. And Warrior, I can't believe I left him off there. That's a great call, Terry. I hate you. That was a great call. let's just jump into all time since I kind of tipped my hand a little bit of who's not in my all-time Mount Rushmore. Ric Flair did not make the cut. He was next in. I'll say that. He was next in. But I'll tell you what, why don't you we'll switch it up this time. You go through yours, and I'll see if we match up.
I'm sure Hulk Hogan's in yours because he definitely was a
– Yes.
He was a mountain to climb. There's no one better than him, and yeah, that he set the bar.
Having said that, I understand too that in the modern time, there's a lot about Hogan that leaves a lot to be desired. You find out later on he was terrible both behind his personal life and his business life behind the scenes, and that's not an endorsement of who he is or even like the character he would eventually become or, you know, how he tried to manipulate other wrestlers and that sort of thing. But the fact is you don't have modern day wrestling without Hulk Hogan. It's undebatable.
Yeah. No, you can't.
All right. Who's up next?
On my list, well, I got your honorable mention next. Ric Flair.
Oh, Flair. Okay. Yep.
He's got to be there. I mean, he was to WCW what Hogan was to WWF, and yep. Ric Flair had been wrestling matches forever. Even after surviving a plane crash, which is unbelievable. And yeah, he's another one that, like Roddy Piper, you go back and watch his tapes and learn how to talk on the mic because he absolutely owned the crowd. You wanted to hate him all the time, and he was fantastic at it. Yeah, all right.
I agree. I can see, like I said, it was a hard call for me. I went back and forth on this all-time Rushmore list for a little while. And Flair, you make a great argument for Flair. I got nothing against any of the part of your argument. I agree, and I wish there was five people on Mount Rushmore. So
yeah, if you ever seen the ESPN, I think it's a 30 for 30 or something like that on Ric Flair. It's really good. Yeah, check that.
I don't know if I've watched that one yet.
Yeah, it's good. Number three, the Dead Man, the Undertaker.
Yes, I got Taker also.
He's got to be on the list. He there's no one else that has taken an actual character and made it last for 30 stinking years.
Right.
Everybody else can kind of tweak their. He was the Undertaker, save for a couple of years where he dropped that gimmick for a little bit, but he was able to make that great too. He was the Dead Man for 30 years, and to be able to own a crowd and get the reaction he did every single time was unbelievable.
And one thing that's not debatable, the single greatest entrance in wrestling history, bar none. And it's not even a close second place.
No, I wish I would have ever seen him in person. I went to a couple events, and he wasn't there those times, and I just wanted to be there and get those chills of having him played over those.
That gong hitting.
Oh, my, yeah. And not only that, he was a good wrestler, too. He could put on a good match with a lot of people, which you can't really say that about Hulk Hogan. Ric Flair in his heyday, he could, but Undertaker could go. And for a big man, he was like 6'10", and he could go.
Yeah.
And that's impressive.
And the character that he was trying to get people to buy into and that he's pulling off for 3 years is not an easy character. I mean, that's a supernatural character in the hands of somebody less capable or less talented. That's a one-off. That's a gobbledygooker. Or that's a, what are some of the other, these characters that didn't make it, the Red Rooster, that sort of thing. It's just... Yeah, he's the best. I'm with Taker 100%.
For sure. Number four, and I have a feeling you might have this one too, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yep, I got Austin as my number four.
Yeah, he was a shot in the arm for the business. He really, it was dying. It was starting to go away. WWF was losing business. WCW was red hot, but they were falling apart from the inside at the time. And along comes Steve Austin, and he got a little dirty on the microphone, and people weren't used to that. And then all of a sudden, he's going after his boss, something you don't do. Why? He's going to lose his job if he does this. And people were told that wrestling was fake by then, but
right.
he still bought into it because he was so good, and he tortured Vince McMahon like no other, and he lived out a lot of people's dreams of what they want to do to their bosses. And it was really something that people could relate with, and it was funny. And and every time they kept knocking him down, he's like, there's no way he's going to get back up and bounce back from this. And then of course he always does. That was definitely stone cold.
Yeah. He's on my list for sure. Just out of curiosity, who's your next in?
As far as, for me, just because I grew up more with the Attitude Era, would be The Rock, because he owned the crowd. He owned the crowd. They hung on his every word, and he was multi-talented. He was also a good in-ring performer for the most part. He was great on the mic, and he could sing. He could do anything, but everything, every time, every moment you think you've heard everything The Rock has to say, throw something new and inventive out there. And the way he talked about himself in the third person all the time, or first person, excuse me. Is that right?
Third. Yeah, the third.
Third person. That's the third person. That's what I thought. And that was amazing. And no one really, I guess people had done it, but nowhere as well as he did.
See, The Rock was on there for me. That's why I asked. So
yeah.
I've got my all-time is Taker, Hogan, Rock, Austin. So that's why I asked. So we've got the same top five. We just flip-flopped to get into the top four there. So I nudged Rock past Flair. Just for all the things you said.
Keep in mind. I say keep in mind, these are our all-time favorites, not our personal Mount Rushmore.
Right.
Yep. So let's make sure that's clear, because we're still got to get to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, we're going to finish on the personal, because I think that'd be more fun to kind of talk about. Let's check out the women's. Sure. I'll go ahead and I'll just give you all four of mine for women's, and then you tell me all four of yours, and then we'll kind of debate and talk about them a little bit. I have Charlotte Flair on the Rushmore for women's wrestling. You're going to notice a trend. Becky Lynch.
You're going current ones. Okay. I have Becky Lynch. Yeah. I had something about her. She can attract a crowd for sure. And when she went bad, man, she set her career off to the moon. She was amazing. She could throw down the ring, and she would throw down on that mic. And yeah, she owned the crowd. She was more popular than any of the male wrestlers, bar none, at the time. It wasn't even close.
Absolutely.
People tuned in to watch her because what she was going to do, what she was going to say. And yeah, she definitely made my top.
Paige.
Okay.
I'm putting Paige on there. My reasoning for that is she broke the Divas mold.
Yeah.
And helped the WWE transfer away from the eye candy only female wrestlers to female wrestlers that can legit go.
Yeah.
And she was not, she's gorgeous. I mean, I'm trying to say, take that away from her. I'm trying to say she's not good looking. She's obviously a good looking one, but that was not her stick. Look who she was coming out against, the Bella Twins. Who were the other ones at that time?
AJ Lee.
AJ Lee. These are all, their whole characters were built around their attractiveness and, you know, their appeal to look at on camera. Paige came out looking all goth. You know, ripped fishnet and, you know, black outfit, dark jet black hair, and just came out and beat you up in the ring. Had some great, the Rampage is a cool finishing move. So that's why she makes my list. And then I went back and forth on this fourth one over and over again. I know you can't have a tie. Even as I'm sitting here right now, I'm not 100% sure that I'm putting down the one that I want. The last one, I'll tell you who the toss-up. I went with Natalya.
Okay.
Just because she's a technical wrestler. She's a bridge between that old school female wrestling and the new. And but her and I had her and Sasha Banks duking it out for this last spot. And I went with Natalya just because she's a bridge between a legendary wrestling family and bringing it into the modern current. So that's what I ended up with. I ended up with Becky Lynch, Charlotte, Natalya, and Paige.
Yeah, Natalya is still going now, but she's definitely got the longevity factor by far. She has been there forever. And so, and she was in there with the Divas before, and then she transitioned into the new style and did so seamlessly. She's really good. I think it's a good pick.
Okay. Honorable mention, Mandy Rose. Just because she looks good on my TV. Oh, my God. Honorable mention. She gets the honorable mention.
All right.
All right, let's hear yours.
I say this one here just looks amazing on TV. And, yeah, you just can't look away. Fabulous Moolah.
Oh, God, Terry, don't do it.
No, I'm kidding. No, she is on the list because of her – even though she was terrible behind the scenes, she also was the longest reigning women's champion. That's never even going to come close to being taken away from her, because it was 20 some odd years, I think. She was on top. She was a bad guy, and she was good at being a bad guy. And for that reason alone, and there wasn't much presence in the 80s as far as women wrestling went, and she was like in her 40s, 50s, and still going. So
right.
You got to tip your hat to her. She was good, and she continued into her 70s even and kept going, which right. was impressive. But, yeah, just for that effect alone, I have her in the top four. Not because she was awesome or anything, but she's there. Next one was an Attitude Era pick for me, was Trish Stratus.
Yep, I thought about her too.
She came in, she at first started out as a valet, but she was a fitness model or something before that. So she was in really good shape. She was very athletic. So she started learning the ropes, no pun intended, and she got good at it. She wasn't up to par with the guys that are out there now, but she could hold her own in a match, and she ended up being the women's champion several times and was the top of the women's division for quite a while. I actually kind of tossed up between her and Lita, another big name around the time.
But those were two that I considered also. And, of course, Trish Stratus came back and had a great showing in that the Evolution pay-per-view.
Yeah. Yeah, for she was in her mid-40s.
The all-women's pay-per-view.
Yeah. Last one I was kind of surprised you didn't have on your list. Was China.
Dang it, Terry.
China
should be on my list.
China definitely should have been on your list. Because she
bounced Natalya. China. Yeah. I'm scratching China. I'm scratching Natalya off. Dang it, Terry. You're making me look bad tonight.
And click, yeah. Intercontinental champion.
Yeah. What was I thinking?
In a highly offensive, good housekeeping match. Where they just fought each other with everything you find in a kitchen, including the sink.
Oh, my God. They got away with so much stuff back then.
But China held her own for quite a while. She was Triple H's valet bodyguard for a long time, and she was knocking out guys because she was so big. She was 6 foot, 6'1", something like that, and just absolutely ripped. And you can't talk about top four all-time women without including China.
Yeah, you've embarrassed me twice tonight. You've called me out on my flaws twice in this podcast. I might get you on that
modern era, too. We'll see.
No, I'm going to make you mad on the modern era. But your list is much – your women's Mount Rushmore. Your women's Mount Rushmore is better than mine. I'm jealous. But I still stand by Mandy Rose as an alternate for only aesthetic reasons.
Stand by her in general.
let's change the subject before it delves into creepy. let's get to the modern guys. Let's go We're going to go back and forth, one at a time for modern. Let's have some fun with it that way. We'll match them up. Oh, let's just do a matchup. First up for me in my modern and in this corner, weighing it in at however many pounds, Brock Lesnar. He's my first up.
That's a tough one to argue because he was – he's not in there anymore, but he has been in there enough. But he's just more of a an attraction, something for to get pay per view buys because he went UFC and everything. Brock Lesnar, he broke the streak. He was absolutely dominant whenever he fought anybody, and now he's just brought in just for pay per views. And that dude, they were paying him like $5 million a year for like five appearances or something like that. It was nuts.
And the thing is, when he really wants to, he's worth every penny.
Absolutely. He was amazing when he hit the scene back in 2002. He won the championship within months. He had great storylines and got to 2004. He's like, I'm done. I'm going to go play football. And he didn't make the team. And then I'm going to do UFC. Won the title. Some people think it's fixed, but who knows? But then he made that huge return back in early 2010s and yeah, he was really, really dominant.
All right, so who's your first out of the gate? Who's matching up against Brock Lesnar?
Chris Jericho.
Jericho. All right, that's a good pick. That's a great pick.
Jericho's been around since the mid-90s, and he is a master on the mic. He's amazing in the ring. He doesn't put on a bad match. He owns a crowd as well. He's another one that new guys should take note from because he really knows what he's doing in there, and you know you're going to enjoy it when he's on there. And that's one of those guys. If I go back and watch old stuff, I'll make sure I watch his stuff because and not fast forward because he's really legit. And now he's in AEW, which I don't watch, but I hear he's crushing it over there as well. And he's like 50 now, and he's still doing great.
Yeah, one of the things that impressed me the most about Jericho, just it's a small thing. It's not one of the things he's going to be most remembered for, but I appreciate it was when he did the list. When he was buddies with Kevin Owens, and he's like, you just made the list. Something as dumb as that, he made into an actual thing that people enjoyed
seeing. They ate it up. You want to know a fun Chris Jericho thing? I heard when he was in WCW, Goldberg came backstage and was talking trash or something, and Chris Jericho took him down.
He whooped him, from what I remember hearing.
Yeah, from what I've heard, he really took it to him, and it was a shock to a lot of people because of how much bigger Bill Goldberg is. But you got to keep in mind, Chris Jericho was trained, I think, up in – was he in the Hart Dungeon with Bret Hart and them?
I don't remember that.
He was definitely Canadian trained, but he was a tough guy. He played hockey. He was tough.
Yeah, that's a great pick. Jericho's a great pick. All right, so I think we're both looking good after our first picks.
I think so.
All right, you start off the second round.
I'm going to go with who I think is one of the best guys just in the ring. He's not bad on the mic. He's not great, but he is really good in the ring, and he really gets you excited. It's Seth Rollins. He is a fantastic in there. He doesn't put on a bad match, and he's great. Yeah.
Yeah, I got nothing bad to say about Seth Rollins. He's an honorable mention for me. Definitely was one I thought about for the modern guys. And those back-to-back pay-per-views against Evolution, the Shield versus Evolution, where Seth Rollins just increasingly jumped off of higher structures in those matches was just crazy. And one of the most gutting heel turns in the last 20 years of wrestling. One of those was shocking, like, I can't believe that just happened type of a heel turn, which was really fun to see.
And he owned it. He was great with it, man. People hated him, but they loved it at the same time because you're in the era where it's fun to like the bad guy now.
Yep, absolutely. So my next out is, and you're probably going to laugh, there is a connection. The big dog. The big dog, Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns. Now, I know for a while he took a lot of heat when people wanted him to be the different kind of – they wanted him to be Cena, and the crowd was not buying it. And but now, in his spot now where he's this, like, mob boss type heel, you're really seeing just how charismatic and engaging Reigns can be. And you can't take away from the fact that he's already main evented, I think, 4 WrestleManias.
It's like 5 years too late with this heel turn.
I know. I'll give you that. And I know he built up a lot of ill will, but he is killing it as his tribal chief head of the table character right now. So he's my number 2, Reigns. And it's interesting that, you know, he's paired up there against Rollins. All right. My next up for the modern guys was a highly sought after draft pick kind of deal. Bounced around the other leagues for a long time. Made his reputation there. None other than AJ Styles. Did he make your list too?
That's my next one.
All right. So AJ Styles is going up against himself. I remember hearing about, you know, I was just on the online chat and everything else, and people talk, because I never watched like TNA or these other indie leagues, but I remember hearing about him, and everybody that was on there, the real true hardcore wrestling fans that would post on there always talked about AJ Styles. And then when he debuted at that Royal Rumble, and that place just went insane when they heard him coming out and his name was announced. And then to seeing how he's handled himself over the course of his run here with the WWE, it's hard to deny that he's one of the best there is, period. And definitely in modern time.
He doesn't have a bad match. He's out right there, and he's better than Seth Rollins even. I mean, he's in his early 40s and still just crushing it out there. And he looks like he's bouncing around the ring like he's 20. And he's as comfortable as can be. He knows how to hit a spot. He knows how to take a bump. He knows how to give them. He doesn't miss anything. He is so good at what he does, and he makes it look so easy and pure, so much to the fact that you might believe that what he's doing is real.
Right. All right, so we agree on AJ Styles. That was, now let's see if we agree on this last one. I'll let you go first, and then I'll come in after you on this last one for the modern era, Rushmore.
The Yes Man himself, Daniel Bryan.
Yes, we agreed on 2 of them. That got Bryan also. I went back. Absolutely. I was watching.
That's another one that's just amazing. He doesn't miss spots. He's awesome at what he does. He makes it look good, and he makes it look fun. You get excited when he's going because he's fast, and Rollins and Styles are fast guys, but they just really put on a good match. They don't miss anything.
Daniel Bryan's run up to WrestleMania 30 is one of the best stories the WWE's ever told.
That was amazing. I remember that. I was really into it at that time, and I was surprised how into it I was. I was like, all right, let's do this. They keep putting him down, and then finally he just starts to break through a little bit more, and then all of a sudden he's in the main event. Because I remember it was supposed to be Randy Orton and Batista, which people are like, we've seen this like 50 times. We don't care about this. And they thought for sure Daniel Bryan was a no-go. And when he got eliminated from the Rumble that year, everybody was like, come on, this guy, he shouldn't be eliminated like this. But, yeah, he's something else, and people love him. That Yes movement was real.
Yep, and it was perfect. Even the authority with the B player, with Stephanie and Hunter doing their best, you know, evil bosses routine. The Occupy Raw night where he brought all his fans that are all wearing those Daniel Bryan T-shirts in the ring with him. And it was just great. In the match itself, they laid that match out itself perfectly. Him having to go up against Triple H at the beginning, getting hurt. I mean, it was just classic wrestling storytelling done right for him to stand tall in that place. You watch that even now, and you just get like, you can just feel that whole place erupt. Everybody's doing the Yes with the arms, the chants, and everything else. It was just great. So, yeah, you're right. I'm right with you there on Bryan. The modern guys, those 4 are doing it right. I have no problem with Rollins being on that list. Rollins is just a crazy person. That guy is – he's so technically proficient too. And he really does. He can play good guy or he can play heel either way. I think you know, as much as I like Reigns, to be fair, Reigns does not play a good guy as well as Rollins does. But I think Reigns is really killing it right now. And in my fantasies, I look like Roman Reigns. So that's kind of another reason why he's all right. Let's close out this session by going through our personal Mount Rushmores. This is not their impact, not whether or not they're the best people in the business. These are just the best people we've liked watching throughout wrestling history, for whatever reason that may be. And I'll let you go first. You want to go one at a time, or you want to run through your four, and then I'll run through my four? Let's do that. Let's just run through your four, and we'll talk about each one. Go ahead.
Sounds good. I'm just going to say the first one here was The Undertaker, for when I was a kid, all the way up in the Attitude Era and watching, he was always there and always a presence and always stole the show. He was always there. Once again, Stone Cold, because he got me excited to watch. He was the reason I tuned in for a long time, because I wanted to see what was going to happen next. And they always left you hanging and wanting more of him, which was great. Right. He was a very unique character, and yeah, he busted the door wide open and changed everything, and that was huge. And absolutely. WWE might not even exist right now if it wasn't for him.
Right.
Next one is my personal favorite. Didn't make any of my other list, but one of my personal favorites is Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
Yep. That dude, he was the old saying goes, Shawn Michaels can have a 5-star match with a broom, because he made everybody that he was in the ring with look amazing. And
you don't get the title of Mr. WrestleMania for nothing.
No, he could make anybody look good and look like a superstar. And that was what was one of the great things about him. In fact, one of the highest ranked match ever in WrestleMania history was him losing to The Undertaker at WrestleMania 25. And that match alone, with the build up to it and the actual match, was incredible. You are on your edge of your seat, and you got two legends going at it, and they're both already in their 40s there and crushing it, just absolutely crushing it. And everybody, and they blew the roof off the place. And then after that, you got the title match, I think it was Triple H and Randy Orton, and nobody, the air came out of the place. Exactly. It's one of the best matches ever. So yeah, Shawn Michaels, first time in DX for everything he's ever done. He's just, he was always good at being a bad guy. He's always good at being a good guy. He was just, and it was funny because
you can make the argument kind of
pass the torch a little by. Oh, sure. He was an alternate for me. But you gotta give it to him, because he kind of passed the torch early in 2000s, because he came back in 2002, and everybody's like, oh, man, I can't believe Shawn Michaels back. He's been out for 4 years. He wins the title in a couple months after he's back, which is cool and all. But after he drops the title, he never holds it again. Even though he's legendary and he's got his status, he lets the other guys have their time, and he doesn't force his way back to the top. And he's another person that had a lot of really big heat behind the scenes. And once he cleaned up and straightened his life out, and when he came back, he was a different person. Everybody just loved being around him after that.
All right, who's your last one?
Well, for me, we got to stick with the Attitude Era. And, I mean, you can't just fall off a 16-foot-high steel cage and not make this list. So Mick Foley.
Absolutely.
He was another one that can make everybody look good because of the pain that he could endure, the actual real pain that he can endure. He was got to be one of the toughest people in the world to beat. They'll take weight.
Oh, no kidding.
On a nightly basis. And still, I mean, dude's still alive, which is, to me, miraculous. Because the stuff that's happened to him. I mean, that cell match alone, we'll talk about that for a second, is he lines him up to throw him off the cage, and Jim Ross's reaction, "Oh my God, oh my God, they killed him. As God's my witness, he is broken in half." Yeah. And that was, I'll never forget that. I was actually watching that live at a friend's house who had ordered the pay-per-view. And
wow,
my jaw was on the floor for like a solid 10 minutes. I couldn't believe it. And then they start wheeling him out of there. And you think, oh my God, I hope he isn't dead, first of all. And then they're talking, and all of a sudden you hear that little ruckus, and oh my gosh, he's back up. What is he doing? He's coming back to the ring, and he climbs back up on the cage, and he gets chokeslammed through the cage onto the ring, which is not that forgiving. It's probably less forgiving than that table he landed on. And a chair on top of that fell from the cage and landed on his mouth and knocked a tooth out. And it didn't go onto the floor. It went up into his nose and was hanging out of his nose for the rest of the match.
Yeah, it was crazy. That's just that he made my list too.
Yeah, he was so much fun to watch. And I mean, Undertaker comes down, twists his knee or something, or his ankle, jumping down the cage, and it's like, I don't feel bad for you, dude. Just look what Mick just did. But
the
thing about
Foley too was that he could pull off that kind of stuff, the insane stuff, the how much pain can he endure type stuff, and then he could be funny too, like with when he was teamed up with The Rock. And you know, one of my favorite little bits that they did was when Foley throws him this whole big birthday party, and he's laid all this stuff out for The Rock, and The Rock's going through it, and he says, "Yeah, my birthday is not even today; it's some other day." And I thought that was so good.
Yeah, he had a lot of classic moments of Mr. Sacco trying to cheer Vince McMahon up in the hospital was hilarious. But yeah, he was clean. I mean, he wasn't always clean, but he could be funny and clean at the same time. And yeah, he was something else, and he was something to look forward to. And you were always entertained when he put on a match.
Yeah, that's a good transition for us there, because Foley made my list. So it's like a bridge from your list to mine, because that was the only one we shared. So Foley was one for me. I'm going to bring up another one that we just talked about, and I'll explain why. I'm putting Reigns on there. He's one of my personal favorites now. People rip on Reigns, but Reigns, the Shield, made me like wrestling again. And Reigns reminded me of those old school WWF superheroes that were bigger than life. They're more muscular, they're more athletic, they're better looking than all the rest of us, and he just looks like a superstar. I love the drive-by. I think that's a great move. I like the spear. I like his Samoan heritage, the tattoos, everything. So Reigns makes a list for me. I know I'm a wrestling purist, are going to hate me for that.
But yeah, he's really technically proficient. He's really good in the ring. But yeah, his microphone skills early on are what killed it for me with him. I mean, he's fun to watch in the ring, but yeah, just have someone speak for him. So now he's got Paul Heyman there. He just,
well, the thing too, I think to stick up for him a little bit is that was stuff they were making him say, you know, those were scripted promos. When he's able to be on his own, he's so charming and good natured, and you know, you see them backstage stuff. And so he makes my list. Reigns. I know a lot of people don't like Reigns, but I do. My next two are Golden Era guys.
I'm not surprised.
That was when I was watching as a kid. So
I can probably guess
you can guess one of them, I'm sure. You may not guess the second
one. Not going to guess the second one?
I'll let you try it. We'll talk about Macho for a second. Macho Man was my favorite from the get-go. When I first started watching wrestling, for some reason I was drawn to him, even though he was a bad guy at the time. I'm sure no little small part of it was Miss Elizabeth. As a young boy, that was probably a big draw. But I loved the flying elbow. I loved the robes. I loved the way he talked. His promos are legendary. History beckons the Macho Man. And so it's just a
crop.
Yeah, cream of the crop. cup of coffee in the big time. I just loved everything about
Macho. He actually talks that way in real life.
That's what I've heard the people talk about, is that that's how he really is. That he would walk through the airport wearing bright green and yellow spandex with cowboy boots and wonder why people were looking at him. That just cracks me up. But yeah, Macho Man. I I have a love-hate relationship with the fact that he walked down to the ring with pomp and circumstance. The same music that you walked down for your graduation for, but yeah. It fit. It fit him. He took on the role of the Macho King and played that perfect, and the whole storyline with Sensational Sherry and then Miss Elizabeth, and he has that match with Warrior, the retirement match, and he loses, and Sherry comes in and starts beating him up, and then Elizabeth runs in and chases Sherry off, and they have that reuniting there, and you see people in the crowd are actually crying. it is so moved, and you're like, ah, that's it. That's why I love him, the Macho Man. All right, now I'm going to let you try to guess the last one.
Ravishing Rick Rude.
No. But I will forever send your wife memes at least once a year of Ravishing Rick Rude.
I'm going to say that you're not going to say Hogan, which
no, it's not Hogan.
You going to go back to Bobby Heenan again?
Nope. I will say this: I'll never vote Hogan because the whole they did Savage dirty. Whole at, you know, WrestleMania 4, Savage gets the title, and this is all in kayfabe storyline, but I knew that as soon as he started having problems with Hogan, I was mad because I'm like, they're going to make Hogan beat him, and Savage would clean Hogan's clock. So I couldn't believe it, but that was a great – the Mega Powers, that was another great long-told story that WWF pulled off that was done really well. But Savage hits him with four elbows, and Hogan kicks out. On that, that's not yeah. No way.
It's like
all right, we'll
take four or five F5s and still kicking out.
Yeah, you turned that back on me, didn't you? All right, that's fair. That's fair. I deserve that one. My last one then on the four was Jake the Snake.
Oh, okay.
I loved the DDT. I loved Damien. His promos that he could cut a promo that would like, make you like turn the lights on and not be afraid to sit in the dark. He had that kind of menace in his voice. And so he was another one. And then, you know, I don't know if you watched the Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts. That's another one that'll kind of, that gets you. You see the demons that he battled. Throughout his life. But yeah, so my personal favorite, Savage, Reigns, Foley, and Jake the Snake. Now here we are, two firmly middle-aged men have just spent the last hour and a half talking about professional wrestling, and I don't even feel the need to apologize for it. It's a tie back to my time as a kid when I really enjoyed it, and it makes me smile. I know other people think it's lowbrow or, you know, they won't admit to liking it, but it makes a lot of money. So I'm not the only person out there that likes, it's not all kids that like wrestling for it to pull in the kind of money that it does.
For sure.
All right. Well, anything else to add on our discussion of WrestleMania 3?
No, it was a fun conversation. I think we've spent even more time talking about our top four, our Mount Rushmores here. So it was a good time. I enjoyed talking about it and arguing why they're on there. So that was fun.
Absolutely. Well, all right. This was my choice. So it's time for you to reveal what will be the next retro review for the next podcast.
I think you're going to like this one. I had a different one picked out beforehand, but I about an hour or two before we started this, Sarah said we should do a podcast on PB Max, and I said, oh yeah, that was her favorite candy bar. I thought, yeah, that's funny, you know, maybe we could mention that. And I thought to myself, no, let's do discontinued candy or other discontinued food products that we miss and discuss a whole bunch of them. So I thought
that's good
topic. So we're going to do that next time. It should get real interesting, and it's going to bring back a lot of memories for both of us, I'm sure.
Well, would you allow soft drinks into that category?
Absolutely. Anything really you can consume from back then.
That okay. You
I said candy at first, but because there's tons of it, because it comes and goes, right. But yeah, it's going to be anything you can eat. So We can call it discontinued candy. We can call it retro foods that aren't here anymore. But either way, that's what we're talking about next week.
All right. That's a great choice. I like that. I'm looking forward to that one. Well, we hope that you are looking forward to it as well. Our vast army of followers, the millions and millions of this podcast's fans, and all you know-it-all maniacs out there, and all the people in the atmosphere. Yeah. We look forward to seeing you next week. I'm Rob.
I'm Terry.
And God bless you, and good night.
Good night.